Hey, this is Sonal. You are tuned in to the Reboot podcast. We've got some of the best bits of our show, which you can always catch live on Dubai Eye every other Sunday at 10 a.m. Now, we have a jam-packed show today, but it's fair to say we have to do things a little bit differently because producer Zina is on holiday. Our gadget guru, Dan, is out of town. I suspect he must be in the Maldives somewhere, knowing him. So I'm a bit bereft, or I was, at least, until Dan said, listen, I've got you sorted. My boss can come in and help you out. So we've gone top shelf here today, and I'm so happy to be joined by Abbas Ali. He's founder of Tea Break Media. Abbas, thanks for coming into the Reboot.
Wonderful to be here, Sonal.
Stepping into Dan's shoes. Who knows? Maybe you'll even, we'll see a little bit more of you as we go on the Reboot.
Hopefully so. And Maldives, huh? I think that's a very wrong guess. I will say that. Being his boss, I kind of know where he is right now.
I know where he is too, but I'm just making fun of him because Zina has this idea whenever he goes on holiday, she's like, how's the Maldives? I don't know where it came from, but we're sticking with the shtick.
Fair enough. That matches his personality perfectly.
It does, doesn't it?
It does.
This is the part of the show where we move into a couple of the news stories that have caught our eye over the week. And I'm going to start with one for me. And we've talked about voice deepfakes on our show before. We even used a tool that was called 11 Labs. But just this week, OpenAI, who, for anybody that doesn't know, the people who are behind ChatGPT, have shared that they are some preliminary insights, as they're calling them, of a model called Voice Engine. And what it does is it takes an input, so some sort of audio file sample, and it generates natural sounding speech that resembles the speaker in a way that sounds realistic. But I thought, okay, I've heard this before. You know, again, we've tried out 11 Labs and we've tried out different other deepfake sort of tools. But they've said they've been developing this since 2022, but they're being cautious and informed about how they release this to the public due to the potential for synthetic voice misuse. Now, very happy that they're being responsible about this, but I'm also intrigued about how precise the audio has become, because we all knew it was going to get there. The initial few deepfakes that we all sort of dabbled with or saw, you thought, okay, there's something uncanny about it, but I can still tell it's a bit off. It's reaching that point. Well, let me give you a couple of examples and we'll put you to the test. So here is an 11 Labs audio deepfake. We did this on our show Off Script. We wanted to wish Gen Z a happy birthday.
Gen Z, Jason Momoa here. The guys from Off Script told me it's a special day. I just wanted to wish you a very happy birthday today. You may not know this, but after we fist bumped that time we met, I didn't wash my hand for a week either.
So, you know, there's something vaguely familiar about the voice. Sounds vaguely like him, but there, it's still, you can tell it's not real.
The delivery is definitely not real.
Exactly. Yeah. But when I compare it to the OpenAI voice engine sample that they've released, now you haven't heard these yet.
No, I haven't. I've read about this, and it's quite fascinating to me that all it takes is 15 seconds for it to learn your voice map. So I'm genuinely very interested in that.
Yeah, that's true as well, because with a lot of other tools, you have to, you know, upload up to 20 clips, or you need at least 3 or 4 for them to be able to do something realistic. I'm going to play the both of the clips for you, and I want you to tell me which one is the reference voice, the input, and which one was generated by AI using a text script. Here's the first one.
A rainforest is a place with a lot of precipitation, and it has many kinds of animals, trees, and other plants. Tropical rainforests are usually not too far from the equator and are warm all year.
Okay, here's another one.
Force is a push or pull that can make an object move, stop, or change direction. Imagine you're riding a bike down a hill. First, the push you give off the ground is the force that gets you going.
Can you tell me which one's real and which one's fake?
I'm going to say the second one was fake.
The second one was the real one.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Because it was too perfect.
Really?
Yes. Because, I mean, the amount of the enunciations and the pauses that they had, I figured that they would have put something on
I suppose that's the voice actor technique, though.
Possible
somebody
so.
Who's kind of perfected that kind of way of speaking in
an
audiobook style.
Which is why I thought that that's probably a fake, because the first one was kind of flat. It was the same tempo across it.
Yeah.
The second one had a lot of pauses, stops, gaps. I thought that was probably something that was put in an extra effort by AI
right.
to do that.
Huh. Yeah. Interesting.
Yep.
That's interesting that you were so confident even taking a stab at that, because when I heard those two, I thought those... I wouldn't even be able to guess.
Gotcha.
I wouldn't have the confidence to or have a reason to think one was fake and then the other one wasn't. So it's just an interesting thing to see how far along these deep fakes have come.
Absolutely, yes.
And it does raise the question, do you feel prepared for this? Does this make you nervous?
Yes, absolutely, it does. I think the world that we're stepping into, our kids are stepping into, is going to be a very different world than what we kind of grew up with. Mm. Just to give you an example, right? My daughter started college last year. And I mean, I know all the scams, all the privacy issues, everything that happens. And I've received messages from people that I think I know asking for money, et cetera, et cetera. And they are so believable that... with my daughter, we figured, okay, let's just use a code word. And anytime that you really need something, make sure you mention that code word. I'll know that's actually you instead of something that's being generated by whatever. So, you know, and only her, my wife, and I know that
code word.
That's
so interesting that you took a proactive response to that. When I first found out about these scams that are happening using deepfakes, I sat my parents down and I said, listen, if you get a call that sounds like me mm-hmm. or any of my siblings, don't believe it just because.
Absolutely.
And because I just thought, you know, I'm exposed to these things. They're exposed to the world, but I just thought they're more likely to have an emotional response. If they hear me panicked, calling, needing help, that they wouldn't think twice.
100%.
If they heard my voice, because it feels so personal and it feels so real. So I did actually sit them down proactively as well to tell them, don't believe this if it happens.
Yep, totally. And this is just going to increase over time. The kind of capabilities that everyone is going to have access to, it's just going to make it more and more difficult.
I think that's a good strategy, though. If you are out there listening, having a code word with the people that you know and love is actually a good way to go about it. Now, your news story is related to Apple and them getting a little bit more into AI.
About time, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Samsung had released Galaxy AI. What are some of the plans that Apple has in this space? What are the changes that our audience, let's say if they have an iPhone or an Apple device, might expect to see?
So we don't know anything for certain until obviously Apple announces it. But there's a good indication that their developers conference, which happens in June every year, where they sort of go through the features of the upcoming OS release, your new iOS version, there's a very, very strong rumor and points to it having AI integrated into the iPhone itself. I think that's a step Apple needs to take because, look, phones have kind of become boring. And honestly speaking, AI is the next 5 or 10 years, the conversation is going to be around that. So if you could, I don't know, potentially speak into your iPhone and ask it to find hotels for your next destination that you think you would like, I think Apple's got a great opportunity here to take the data that's already on your iPhone. They're strict about privacy. They try not to send your data to the cloud. Mm-hmm. That's their whole thing. And if you have information already present on your phone that it could use. Now, again, this becomes a bit challenging because obviously everyone uses apps like Instagram and WhatsApp. The question is, can Apple tap into the data to find out what you're talking about or what you're looking at and then make a recommendation, or can it go through your emails and see what is it that you're kind of looking for? So in order to deliver a better result, I think this is something that is required. But then as far as privacy laws are concerned, where do you stop?
Well, it wouldn't be the first time people are willing to give up their privacy for convenience.
I think the first time we signed online, we already did that.
Exactly.
We did that already, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, even if it creates an opt-in approach where you can kind of decide, I think a lot of people will be like, I'll take the convenience. Everybody has my data already anyways.
Absolutely. And look, I mean, if there are tons of tools right now that let you do this already, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But the problem is they don't know you. What they might do is go through TripAdvisor's list of top 10 hotels or whatever, and then just based on that recommend. But if your phone knows that you've looked at this hotel or a social clip or whatever else in there, it knows that you're kind of interested in that. And then, you know, sort of personalize that recommendation and bring that out or surface that up.
And when was that conference again that you said where we'll find out more potentially?
It's called WWDC, so Worldwide Developers Conference. And I think it's June 10th this year.
Brilliant. So we'll stay tuned for that this summer to find out a little bit more about what they've got coming with AI. And one of the topics I wanted to discuss with you today are voice assistants. Now, I have never successfully used one. I don't have the patience for the, hey, let's say Google
Dingus.
Or Siri or Bixby or whatever it is. Can you help me make a booking at this restaurant or however you can use them and then go through it about 8 times till it understands what you're looking for? I'd rather just pick up the phone or do it online myself.
Fair enough.
But of course, I'm somebody maybe who just hasn't figured out how to do it right. And I was remarking to you how I don't actually know any friends who use their voice assistants. Exactly one. She happens to be a hairdresser, and it's such a practical application where she may have a lot of like color or dye on her gloves and her hands aren't free. So she'll use her watch and say, "Hey Siri, set a timer of 10 minutes for me." It's such a practical application in that one instance, but I don't know any other person that uses it in their day-to-day life. And the reason I was intrigued by this is we make a little bit of fun of Bixby, I think it's fair to say. As the voice assistants go, it's maybe not the strongest, right? Or at least doesn't have the reputation of being the strongest.
Who chose that name anyways?
I know, Bixby. I mean, I think they need a complete rebrand, 100%, a complete overhaul, right? But what's interesting is, the reason we're talking about this is I saw a story to say, Bixby's not dead yet. Apparently, a Samsung executive has talked to CNBC to say that they are working so hard to equip their voice assistant with the AI features, suggesting the company sees the likes of Gemini as competition, but not a replacement. And I just thought that was interesting that they're doubling down on Bixby when they really should be rebranding altogether. And
absolutely. And look, it doesn't make sense when you've got the likes of Apple. There were rumors coming out that they're talking to Google about licensing Gemini for an upcoming version of iOS. So if you've got a company that's already doing something wonderful in that space, why go and reinvent the wheel? I don't get it. I don't think Samsung should put in more effort into Bixby. Just partner with OpenAI or Google for that and then just use that for it. Also, just a quick note on what you said just a minute earlier. You might have set a lot of people's voice alarms or timers on when you mentioned, "Hey Siri, do whatever you asked it to do."
Yeah.
Because anyone who's listening to it, their phone might suddenly think, "Oh, wait a minute, you're just talking to them." So we generally, whenever we're talking about voice assistants, we use a cord board like Dingus or whatever. Just so you don't set up anybody else's alarm.
I didn't even think of that. That's how much this is not a part of my day-to-day life that it didn't even occur to me. Hey, Dingus. Okay, yeah. So there we go. We'll be calling it Dingus from now on. It didn't even occur to me that from the radio that it would be able to do that.
It's happened to me so many times when I'm listening to a podcast or something and somebody actually says that, and the next thing you know, my phone's talking back to me on that.
That's so funny. Yeah. So as I was saying, we inhabit completely different worlds. I'm sure you're using your voice assistant all the time. So I thought, let's give our listeners who are a little bit more like me a bit of a guide. Should we be using them? Which one is the best one? And let's start there, in fact, because you've used the different ones. You've referred to Gemini and also OpenAI as being particularly strong in this area. So let's talk about that. Which is the best voice assistant? If you were looking to set one up, let's say, in your home, in your opinion.
Yep, fair enough. Look, I don't discriminate, and I've got all three at my house. And by three, I mean Apple's Siri, Google's Assistant, and then Amazon's Alexa. I won't say I have different use cases for all of them, but all three coexist quite peacefully. If I was to pick one of them, it would probably be Amazon's Alexa for two particular reasons. One, it is officially available in the Middle East. Google Assistant still isn't. And secondly, it's compatible with a lot more smart gadgets and devices than Apple's Siri or HomeKit. So purely because of those two reasons, I think Alexa is the best device to get if you're looking to integrate it into your home.
And how do you find yourself, how often do you use your voice assistant? What kind of difference does it make to your life?
Oh, daily, multiple times a day. Mm. From something as easy as asking what time it is or setting a timer or turning on the AC or turning off the lights, use it constantly. It's quite interesting, and I have a funny story to kind of share with you on this as well. So Siri has an option where you can voice train it, and it only responds to your voice instead of somebody else's voice. So that's a great feature, right?
We wouldn't accidentally turn it on by talking about it on the radio. By the way, I'm sorry for anybody that's happened to today.
Right, but what that also means is that anytime my wife wants to ask it to do something, she wouldn't listen to it, and she gets so frustrated at this, so frustrated. She's like, "Your second wife is not listening to me," because obviously it's trained to my voice. So just a little off thing.
Siri's sexist.
But I think Alexa is probably the best one to use, and there are multiple ways in which you can do this. Now, let me just go a little bit off track over here and tell you the potential of some of these things. Apple recently launched the Vision Pro, which was their VR headset, and there was a journalist in the U.S., Joanna Stern. She did a phenomenal review of it, and one thing she showcased was so incredible. I thought that she had these Vision Pros on, and you could see the world through it, right? She went into the kitchen and started cooking a few things. She had four or five different pans, and she would just look at it and say, "Set the timer for this pan for 3 minutes," and then she'd look at the other one. So she could see in real time, because it would count down the clock in VR, looking at it. Okay, this has got 2 minutes left. This has got 10 minutes left. This has about 15 minutes left. It was phenomenal the way that worked. I think that's such an amazing showcase of technology, because it helps you understand in the real world where and how you could use this. Mm. Same thing with voice assistants. There are so many things with which you can use them now. I use them to set timers, to see the time, to check the temperatures or set the temperatures, turn my lights, turn my TV on and off and stuff like that. There are tons of things that you can do with them.
If somebody doesn't have a smart home yet, and it's funny, we will be talking about that, about what you should consider upgrading next. But for somebody who doesn't have a smart home, what are some simple command prompts that they should start with just to try to get used to? Because it's a different way of living, isn't it? It's, you know, all of a sudden you have to think to use your voice assistant and get yourself accustomed to that.
Absolutely. So look, I mean, just go ahead and buy a small Alexa device. They're, if you want something with a screen, they're as little as 200 something odd dirhams. If you don't want something that's green, they're under 100 dirhams. I would recommend getting one with a screen just because of future-proofing yourself a little bit. And just by getting that itself, you could ask it to read you the news or check the time or set a timer, et cetera, et cetera. That's your first step at it. Second step would be actually adding devices in your home, such as light bulbs or thermostats, et cetera, that you could then control using that device. But the first thing for us is just get yourself an assistant, get used to it. Like, you know, just ask it, tell me a joke, or what's the weather outside, or, you know, what's the latest news on BBC, for example. It will tell you all of that and get used to that as a first step.
Does it ever come out with a good joke? Do you ever have bants with your voice assistant?
I haven't had yet, but I think something I should try it out.
Yeah,
my daughter loves
the
jokes, so they're great for her age.
I'm pretty sure if I got one, that's all I would do. I'd just talk nonsense with it, entertain myself.
Sure, which is absolutely. Why not? Why not?
You're so kind. Dan would have scoffed at me by now, but I appreciate your kindness, even though I can see you're thinking it. All right, we are going to move on with the conversation to smart homes. And specifically, I think a lot of people think it's a daunting prospect to start up a smart home. But there are little things that you can do, and even beyond the smart home, even when it comes to regular gadgets. What are the gadgets we should all have at home, even though most of us still don't? Unless you're a boss, unless you're Dan, unless you're somebody who is so into this sort of world, what are some of the things that any of us should really consider upgrading with? We're going to come to that next. Stay with us on The Reboot.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is The Reboot
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome along to The Reboot with myself, Sonal. No Zina, no Dan today, but we're joined by Abbas Ali, who's the founder of Tea Break Media. And Abbas, one of the things we're talking about is gadgets for the home. Now, I was telling you that I had upgraded with some smart lights, and it was one of those things that was so simple to do. It's not the cheapest thing in the world, but considering the difference it's made to my life, it's been such good value that I just think, why doesn't everybody have smart bulbs in their homes? And there are so many topics like this that you must consider on a day-to-day basis because you have a smart home.
Correct. That's right. And bulbs were literally the first thing that became smart at my house as well.
Yeah.
It was just so easy to sort of replace them and add something. I did make a mistake when I first bought a set of light bulbs. Used them for about a good month or so. Loved them. They were phenomenal. And I went on a mission to change every single light bulb in my house to a smart light bulb. What I didn't realize is there's usually a hard limit on these things. The system that I was using is powered by Philips. It's called Philips Hue, which is fantastic. But there's a limit of 53 light bulbs that you can attach to it. So my 100-plus light bulb suddenly stopped working, and the system just got overloaded. And I was like, wait a minute, I need to go back.
100-plus light bulbs. How many rooms do you have in your house?
I've got three daughters. That's all I'm going to say.
I was like, what is the hard limit? It must be at like 15. No, 53, and you still surpassed it.
Absolutely. So then that made me rethink of how I want to do things. And then the next idea was, okay, wait a minute. Why don't we get smart switches that then control multiple lights so you don't have to worry about each single light being connected to your Wi-Fi or anything? That's the second thing it does. There are tons of devices managed, you know, continuously talking to each other. So it creates a lot of congestion on your Wi-Fi network. So that's also something that you want to take care of or understand moving forward with that. So I went to switches next. which then allowed me to control each room by just a single switch.
And smart switches, talk us through it. You don't actually need to have a smart bulb with the smart switch. The
Correct.
Idea is that you can take the bulbs in your house. You don't have to upgrade. How do you connect the switch to it then?
So you will need an electrician for this, because they'll need to remove your physical switch that's on your wall and then install a smart switch on there. A smart switch is always on. It's literally just a matter of clicking, which changes the state of the switch or tells the switch inside what you need to do. So you will need an electrician for this. Mm-hmm. If you are looking to sort of work on a small lamp or something, that's easy. They have little smart plugs that kind of go in, which then you connect your other plug on top of that, and they'll just turn on and off through your app or something, or your voice assistant if you'd like that. But in order to do a full switch, which has connecting all your ceiling lights and stuff, you will need a technician for that.
Yes, you forget your traditional dimmer, basically. You should get a smart switch, but how much is this going to set people back, roughly?
Look, I mean, you can get them for as cheap as 40 to 50 dirhams a switch. So again, on Amazon or Noon or whatever your preferred e-commerce platform is, you can buy cheap ones. You can buy really cheap ones as well. And then they go all the way up to hundreds of dirhams.
Yeah. So in your recommendation, smart switch better than smart bulbs if you're going to...
I think so. So if you look, I mean, if you only going to replace maybe 10 to 15 bulbs, then maybe the bulbs is a better idea. But if you've got a larger space and, you know, you have multiple rooms where you want to make sure you control everything, then switches is definitely the way to go.
Now, what about smart outlets? This is something I was reading of that I didn't even consider. Now, my colleague Chris on our show Off Script has a weird tick, let's call it. I could call it many other things, but we'll call it a tick, where before he goes to bed, he has to actually turn off all of his power outlets.
Okay.
He's a total lunatic, but he does this every single night, or so he says, and then turns them back on in the morning. You can actually have a power outlet, which for other people who don't do that on a nightly basis, maybe when you're going on holiday or, you know, if there is a device you want to be able to control the actual outlet itself, that you can have a smart outlet.
Yeah, absolutely.
How does that work?
So I know one other person that does exactly that
as
well. Yes. But look, I think if you are connecting this to a smart outlet, you're fooling yourself at the end of the day, because basically what a smart outlet is always on. It's just stopping power to whatever is connected out of it. So think of it in a way where if you've got a switch that you plug in your extension wire, which has everything else to it, right? You're not turning off that switch. You're just turning off each of those individual buttons on the strip. The strip has the power. It's just that you're limiting it by just turning that little switch that's further connected to the next gadget that you have.
Right.
So
it's not the same as turning the switch on the wall off. I understand your
point.
Absolutely,
absolutely. But yeah, I mean, if that's what you want to do, then sure, of course. Yeah, you can.
How
do
you use them in your house more practically?
The only places I use these outlets is for lamps, for example. If I just want to connect a lamp and I want a regular halogen lamp in it, not a smart light bulb or something, then I just connect that to the plug and then just use it from there on.
Right. Now, on the smart homes, one final one, thermostats.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wouldn't have considered this because I think, well, my AC already has that kind of temperature control option.
Yeah.
But you have smart thermostats as well in
your
home.
That's right.
And why is that? How do you use that practically?
So, look, I think this is when you're sort of leveling up your smart home game, right? If you have smart thermostats installed that can talk to your air conditioning and set room temperatures, you can create a routine where anytime you leave work around 4:30 or 5 p.m., you know, your smart devices will know that you've left work, and then they can set the temperature in your house or in your room at a specific whatever temperature or degree that you want it to. So by the time you arrive in your house, it's exactly to your liking. So I think that's a great example of a smart thermostat where, you know, you say, hey, every time I reach home, I want the temperature to be 22 degrees or 21 degrees or whatever it is that you like. So as soon as you leave work, you can do that. One of the examples, what I do is at times when we go for a longer break to Muscat, Oman or something like that, and we usually drive and it's a 4-hour drive. So if we're gone for, I don't know, a week or so, especially during summer, the house does become warm. So before I leave Oman, I can just instruct my smart thermostats to set the temperature at the house at whatever, you know, I'd like. And by the time I reach 5 hours later, the home house is completely cool.
Yeah.
And it's just so convenient.
I think on the being away thing as well, especially when people leave here during the summer months, it's incredibly humid.
That's
right. Different houses have different capabilities, I think, with the humidity in terms of managing to block it out. You know, turning that AC on just a little bit. There's a conversation in my compound Facebook group every summer, sort of what temperature should we leave the automatic AC on at, where it's responsible, you're not using too much energy, but at the same time, you're ensuring that everything in your house is safe from mold or any of the other issues that you can get with humidity.
Absolutely.
It is nice to know in theory that you could just control that remotely.
You can, and there are sensors available for thermostats that can actually measure humidity as well. So
right.
you could kind of say that, hey, if a humidity falls over 80%, then go ahead and turn that on as well. So, you know, it's insane what you can do with it.
Okay. And again, how much roughly is this going to set you back?
So I would say invest in a good one. Mm. And you're looking at about 700 odd dirhams or so for a good one. Yeah.
All right. Now, final one for you. And this is not necessarily smart home related. But again, the topic is gadgets we should all have in our home that maybe a lot of us still don't or we don't even think of. Is having a printer at home. Now, this happened because I was having a conversation with a colleague about just, you know, we were giving a printer away as a prize, and we thought, it's such an odd prize. And then I said, well, actually, I can't think of anything more helpful than having a printer at home. I don't have one. Again, I don't really know, except people who have large family homes sometimes with kids, that they do have them. But as a single, you know, as just a couple or a single person, oftentimes you don't have a printer at home. But they're incredibly helpful. What is the best one to have at home, do you think, that doesn't take up too much space? Small, compact, gets the job done for basic tasks.
Sure. So, look, I've actually got one hidden in my pantry just because my wife doesn't want it out in the open in the house. And my kids love to print their homework or artwork or whatever else it is. And I would recommend that if color isn't something that you definitely require, then go for a laser printer. Mm. They last you a long time on a toner. They're small in size. They're fairly energy efficient as well. You can just tuck them anywhere you want to. HP makes some really good ones. There are a ton of all-in-ones out as well.
Yeah.
They're like super small, and literally for like 300, 400 odd dirhams, you can buy one and just stick it wherever you want to.
Yeah. Any final things on this topic of the device that everybody should have in their home?
Oh, that's a good question. Look, I mean, you've got air purifiers, you've got robot vacuum cleaners, you've got so many different gadgets.
Let's talk about the air purifiers.
Yeah.
I assume you have one.
I do have
and
one.
And have you felt it's made a difference?
Yes, it definitely has. So, you know, what's interesting is that because they're smart devices, they can read the room and tell you the amount of dust or filtration, etc., that happens on there. The one use case where we use it is whenever we get any work done in-house, contractors or whoever else comes in, there's usually some dust and stuff left in the room, and we just go in and overnight leave the air purifier on there. It works phenomenally well because my wife is, she would sneeze the hell out of dust anytime there is, and you could literally see the difference in the morning after. So it's great from
it
that
helps with allergies and things like that as well.
Yes.
I wouldn't have even thought of that.
Yes.
All right, those are some great tips. Abbas, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure
it's so nice
here.
To have you on, and hopefully we'll have you back on
for sure
again on The Reboot.